Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Welcome to Season 5, Episode 3 of They Walk Among Us, a podcast dedicated to UK true crime. This episode contains distressing themes, descriptions of violence, and is intended for a mature audience. Listener caution is advised. Red stains on the carpet, red stains on your knife. Oh, Dr. Buck Ruxton, you murdered your wife. The nursemaid saw you and threatened to tell. Oh, Dr. Buck Ruxton, you killed her as well. Lancashire nursery rhyme, parody of the song Red Sails in the Sunset, latter half of the 1930s. Isabella Ruxton was born Isabella Kerr during 1901 in Camelin, a village in Falkirk, Scotland. In her late 20s, Isabella was working as a restaurant manager in Edinburgh, 23 miles from her hometown, when she met and later married a sailor from Holland in a whirlwind romance. She took his surname and became Isabella Van Ess. However, the marriage quickly dissolved after only a few months when Isabella met and fell in love with a doctor, a man known by a variety of names before he settled on the impressive sounding Buck Ruxton. Dr. Ruxton left Scotland for London, and less than a year later, Isabella, who was newly divorced, joined him in 1928. The couple did not marry, but to convey respectability at a time when cohabiting was frowned upon, Isabella changed her last name to Ruxton. Everyone assumed, even Isabella's own family, that the couple had tied the knot. After several years in London, in 1930 they again up sticks and moved north to Lancaster in the county of Lancashire, where Dr. Ruxton became a GP. The couple took up residence in a property at 2 Dalton Square, a location that was also to operate as a doctor's surgery. Ruxton's partner, Isabella, was social and well-liked in the middle-class Lancaster community they now called home. She spent her spare time doing charitable work, predominantly with disadvantaged children. During March 1899, Buktiha Chompa Rostamji Ratanji Hakim, or Buck Ruxton as he would come to be known, was born in Bombay, an Indian city that would also go on to change its name to Mumbai many years later. Raised by a middle-class Parsi family, Ruxton was offered the opportunity to study medicine, attending Bombay University. At just 23, he obtained a degree in medicine. 2 years later, his family were desperate to see the eligible bachelor married. His bride, Mutan, was from a strict Parsi family, and they felt the young doctor may not follow tradition closely enough. However, Mutan's parents relented and offered their daughter's hand in marriage. Ruxton was paid a large dowry from his bride's wealthy family. The doctor's educational and professional life was also reaching new highs. The first-class honours he earned in gynaecology and midwifery, and later his Bachelor of Surgery qualifications, opened up a world of opportunity. The natural first step out of university was to work at Bombay Hospital. By the time he married Mutan, Ruxton had a job with the Indian Medical Service in a position which involved international travel. He was rarely at home, and sadly the marriage soon broke down not long after it started, though a divorce was not sought. In time, Dr. Ruxton, under the more westernised name of Gabriel Hakim, travelled to England and studied at London's University College Hospital. In 1927, he left London to live in Edinburgh, Scotland, hoping to become a fellow at the Royal College of Surgeons. This was the same year he met Isabella. Surprisingly, after such an exemplary education in what was then Bombay, Ruxton failed the entrance exam a total of 3 times. The General Medical Council were convinced to reassess his application, and due to his study record, Ruxton was admitted. When the doctor left Scotland, he officially changed his name once again, this time to Buck Ruxton, because he felt it tripped off the tongue. Prior to what we now know as the NHS, which provides free healthcare to all, back then if a patient sought medical treatment, they would be required to pay. Dr. Ruxton substantially discounted or waived the fee entirely to people who simply could not afford treatment for the medical attention they often so desperately needed. Over the intervening years, his generosity made the doctor, who had since become a father to 3 children, a popular and respected man. It was his skill and perceived kindness that made his surgery such a success. Mary Jane Rogerson was a young nanny, a position then called a nursemaid, entrusted with caring for the Ruxton's children. She lived in Dalton Square with the family and was as reliable an employee as she was a daughter. One of 12 children, at least once a week she would return home to her father and stepmother, about 5 miles away on Thornton Road in Morecambe. It was her routine. The 20-year-old had little time for a social life. From the outside, Isabella and Buck Ruxton seemed a well-to-do, charitable couple with 3 lovely children. But this was far from the truth, Dr. Ruxton was controlling and overwhelmingly jealous. So much so that in the aftermath of a heated exchange, of which there were many, a desperate Isabella attempted suicide. Another argument saw Isabella flee to the police station to tell the officers that her husband had attacked her. But as the situation was labelled a domestic issue, she was sent home to try and fix the problem herself. Outside the home, Isabella was good at socialising, mingling with the other guests at the many events the local doctor and his wife were invited to attend. But if she spoke to another man, Dr. Ruxton let his anger simmer until they got home, when it reached boiling point. He was always accusing his partner of having affairs. There is no evidence Isabella ever did, and no one came forward to support the accusations. During the beginning of autumn 1935, the parents of Mary Jane Rogerson were concerned they had not seen or heard from their daughter, which was extremely uncharacteristic. The first and only person they could ask was Mary Jane's employer, Buck Ruxton. Officers from the Lancashire Constabulary visited the Ruxtons' home to inquire where their nursemaid might be, but the doctor told them Mary Jane had not been around for the past 2 days. The last confirmed sighting was during a tea party for the children at Dalton Square on September 14th at 7:30 p.m. It was not until 3 weeks later that newspapers as far as Portsmouth and Aberdeen began to report on the disappearance of the young nanny. Dr. Buck Ruxton spoke to journalists about Mary Jane's disappearance, saying, "She just vanished from the house, and I have not heard from her since. It is all very strange. A room was searched when she failed to return, but nothing that would tell us anything has been found." Her father also spoke to reporters about Mary Jane. "She was one of the finest daughters in the world. She was always a home girl. All this time has gone by without a word from her. It is a terrible thing. Her mother is very upset. The police asked us for a photograph of her, but we have not one in the house, as she was never the sort of girl to spend money on photographs." In articles reporting on her appearance, Mary Jane was described as rather petite in stature at 5'2", with a medium build and light brown bobbed hair. Her eyes were blue, and the papers mentioned that a defining feature was one of her eyes drifted slightly off centre. She was often seen wearing a light blue beret and a matching coat. Only 3 days later, it was announced another member of the household had gone missing, Isabella Ruxton. Her friends, not her partner Dr. Ruxton, had reported the disappearance. The 35-year-old was described as between 5'5" and 5'6", well-built, fair complexion, pale blue eyes, and fair hair. She spoke with a strong Scottish accent. Some distinguishing features were also relayed. The bridge of Isabella's nose was uneven. Dental work had been completed on the upper left side of the jaw. 3 teeth had been removed and replaced. The teeth were held in her mouth by a gold clip, which could be seen when Isabella smiled. The last time she was spotted, Isabella was reportedly wearing a cream silk blouse, a light brown jacket, dark brown shoes, and a skirt. She also wore a ring shaped in a V on the forefinger of her left hand. Her partner, Dr. Ruxton, suggested the last time he saw his wife and the nursemaid was on September 15th. They told him they were going away for a few days to the home of Isabella's sister in Edinburgh. but her sibling was still waiting for them to arrive. Dr. Ruxton claimed that he sent a letter to the address in Edinburgh, but the mail had been returned unopened. He also explained that he had delayed informing the police of his wife's disappearance, as he expected her and the family nursemaid to return at any time. He was left with their three children and no one to look after them while he ran a very busy doctor's surgery from the house. Since their disappearance, Ruxton said he had been relying on the kindness of friends. As it had been nearly a month since either woman was last seen, the Chief Constable of Lancashire Police appealed for information. He said Isabella was an expert motorist and familiar with London and some parts of Scotland. Her friends in the English capital and family in Edinburgh had not seen Isabella either alone or with Mary Jane. Neither woman would be found alive. Dr. Buck Ruxton had used his surgical precision to dismember Isabella and Mary Jane in the bathtub. He drained them both of blood, a gruesome task indeed, but Ruxton still carried it out even though he had been with Isabella for 8 years, and she was the mother to his three young children. The doctor also knew Mary Jane Rogerson well. She lived in Ruxton's home, carrying out his duties with no complaint. As far as could be established, Ruxton had no issues or ill feeling towards his children's carer. Maybe she was disturbed by a ruckus, and after investigating, caught Ruxton murdering his wife. The doctor had to act fast. The coarse carpets in the hallways were steeped in pools of blood. The bathroom also bore evidence of what had taken place at Dalton Square in those early morning hours of September 15th. The Ruxtons had employed the help of three cleaners. They were known as charwomen. One of them, Mrs. Oxley, was due to start work at 7 a.m. that morning, but half an hour before she was scheduled to arrive, Dr. Ruxton called at her home and told Mr. Oxley, who opened the door, that his wife's services would not be required that day. When someone popped by the address on Dalton Square later to deliver some milk, an agitated Buck Ruxton answered the door with his hand in a bandage. In an effort to hide his crimes, Ruxton had removed the upstairs carpets, but the blood had seeped through to the floorboards. He didn't ask any of the three cleaners for help. Instead, he requested a patient called Mrs. Hampshire help scrub the stains. She was not sure why the doctor had asked for assistance, but needing the work and trusting the doctor, she agreed, unaware of what exactly she was cleaning up. The property was usually spotless. With all the assistance the Ruxtons had and the surgery downstairs, Mrs. Hampshire was confused to see the upstairs hallway floor wadded with straw. She then went to use the bathroom, and although it appeared clean, the usually white bath had a yellow hue. Mrs. Hampshire could see a metal tin in the garden full of mounds of carpet and other fabrics, some partially burned. As she was cleaning, she unsuccessfully tried to gain access to the bedrooms, including where Isabella and Buck Ruxton slept. It was later thought the bodies were being stored in these rooms for a few days, until Ruxton decided precisely how to dispose of them when he found the time in between treating his patients. A large piece of rolled carpet and a smart suit were offered to Mrs. Hampshire. Not wanting to turn down expensive items, she took them with her. But when she had the chance to examine the suit at home, she realised it was covered in odd stains as was the carpet when she unraveled it. She took the carpet outside to clean it. As she sloshed buckets of water over the stains, the liquid ran a deep red. Many buckets later, the color of the water had not changed, and the stains could not be removed. Several weeks later, on September 29th, a grim discovery was made by a mother and daughter taking a walk on holiday in Moffat, a town in Dumfriesshire, Scotland. As they made their way over a scenic bridge known as Garden Home Lynn, one of them, Susan Johnson, peered down at the rocky slope ravine below. She spotted something wrapped in paper. At first, Susan could not quite make out what the object was, but eventually it became clear. Her eyes had not deceived her. A decomposing foot protruded from the newspaper it was wrapped in. She then saw a human hand, and nearby was a human head. Susan and her mother ran to get help. In time, after pumps were used to drain pockets of the ravine and the foliage and obstacles were cut back and chopped down, in all 30 wrapped packages were recovered from the area. They contained organs wrapped in newspaper, much like butchers would parcel up meat at the time. Police at the scene were not exactly sure how many bodies they were looking at, but the first guess was approximately 5. The Yorkshire Evening Post printed a short piece about the discovery, below the descriptions of the missing Isabella Ruxton and Mary Jane Rogerson. The article, titled Ravine Mystery, offered the opinion that both victims could be female. However, following initial examinations, the identification was hampered by the amount of decay and mutilation. The gender of the victims was difficult to confirm, as the culprit had removed nearly any trace of their sex, including any reproductive systems. On the journey between Lancashire and Scotland, Dr. Buck Ruxton had time to think about covering his tracks while driving alone for many hours in the car. He paid a visit to Mrs. Hampshire, requesting politely that he have his suit back temporarily so he could take it to the dry cleaners. She did not return it, but instead suggested she take it to get cleaned. Ruxton agreed, but only after he tore out the tags from the suit. As the pair spoke, Mrs. Hampshire thought the doctor appeared unwell, and she remarked how ill he looked. Ruxton said he had a restless night. The wound on his hand, which he claimed was from an innocent injury, had kept him awake. While the doctor would offer different reasons to different people, in this instance he said it was from slicing it on a tin opener. As far as Mrs. Hampshire was concerned, the bloodied carpets were a product of the wound on Buck Ruxton's hand. Investigators from Lancashire, Dumfries and Glasgow worked together on the case. The grim discovery of the mutilated body parts cut with surgical precision caused a great deal of work for the police force. It seemed like identifying who they belonged to was an impossible task. Trying to find each part of the two women was a challenge, as they'd been stripped of anything the killer believed was identifiable, including the skin on one of their faces. This turned out to be Isabella. Her murderer was careful in making sure the misaligned bridge of her nose was not immediately evident, which in turn would have given away who she was. Her front teeth were a defining characteristic as they protruded slightly. They had also been removed by the culprit. Mary Jane's eyes were cut out, and the skin on one of her forearms, where a birthmark had been visible, was sliced off. All this was done in an effort to conceal who the victims were. The destruction of any and all physical characteristics made it nearly impossible to correctly ascertain the gender of the victims. However, after meticulously dismembering the bodies, the murderer slipped up. The items in which he had wrapped the body parts gave away clues as to the date and possible location of where they were killed. A child's romper, shorts, a man's vest and cotton wool were amongst the items used to package the victim's remains. Most telling were a newspaper and a green blouse. The paper helped pinpoint a potential date on which the attacks took place, and even more useful to investigators, one of the newspapers was a Sunday Graphic, sold only in Morecambe and Lancaster. The remains were passed to a forensic scientist to piece them back together, almost like a jigsaw puzzle. Consequently, the crime became known as the Jigsaw Murders in the press. While there appeared to be a link to the Ruxtons' home in Lancaster and Mary Jane's in Morecambe, there was a problem. Mary Jane's stepmother was almost certain that her stepdaughter had four teeth removed from her lower jaw. The victim they thought could be Mary Jane, discovered in the ravine, had all of her lower teeth intact. Reports then started to circulate that the bodies found could not be Isabella and Mary Jane. Chief Constable Van of Lancashire Police told reporters that at the time, there was no proof of a link between the bodies found in Scotland and the missing women. He said, "My attention has been drawn to certain reports inferring a connection between the Moffat crime and disappearance of Mrs. Ruxton and Mary Jane Rogerson. I dare to say I have no evidence of any such connection." Dr. Ruxton even gave comment, agreeing with the Chief Constable. "I have been caused tremendous anxiety and worry because their disappearance has been associated with the Moffat mystery." Searches for the missing women were being carried out in major cities throughout the UK, with a focus on Mary Jane, as it was believed she could have travelled to Manchester.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The case was groundbreaking due to the new scientific techniques utilized, which included forensic entomology. Maggots and larvae were removed from the body parts and sent to a laboratory at the University of Edinburgh. By understanding the species of insects and the stage in their life cycle, this would establish when the body parts were disposed of, or even how long the victims had been dead. Dr. Mern studied the samples and concluded that the remains were in the river for about 2 weeks. An insect commonly known as a blowfly was identified, and it was the life cycle of this creature which gave the time frame to work from. This period would be invaluable for investigating officers who could then pinpoint the days where the suspect had been in the area. Perhaps witnesses would remember seeing something from that crucial period. Due to the level of decomposition on the victim's fingers, a standard fingerprint test could not be performed. This was one of the first cases, if not the first, that employed the use of dermal fingerprint testing. A comparison was made with the print sourced from a decanter in the Ruxtons' home. They were believed to match that of Mary Jane Rogerson. Also, both of the victims' left feet were used to make casts. The replicas were tested, and they fitted into shoes that belonged to Isabella and Mary Jane. Finally, X-rays of the victims' skulls, labelled 1 and 2, were taken. Photographs of Isabella and Mary Jane were superimposed over them at the same angle to see if they matched. They did, as far as the experts could tell, but this technique was not reliable evidence on its own. Dr. Ruxton spoke to the press frequently, but each time his story was changing and evolving. Just under a month since the women were last seen, he said. With regards to Mrs. Ruxton, we have been in touch with an aunt in Harrow, but she has seen nothing of my wife. Before my wife left me, she mentioned she might see some friends in Cambridge Gardens, London, but I do not know who these people are or their exact address. I am trying to get in touch with another friend of my wife who may know. Ruxton had not kept track of the many lies he told. On one occasion, he even claimed that Mary Jane Rogerson was pregnant and decided to leave town to terminate the pregnancy. This tale did not marry up, as Mary Jane was close to her family, and if she was looking for her pregnancy to be terminated, wouldn't her employer, Dr. Ruxton, be the best person to go to due to his training? In another story, Dr. Ruxton told an employee through glassy eyes, almost overflowing with tears, that Isabella had left him for another man. But to other staff and acquaintances, he reassured them by telling them that Isabella was simply on holiday, in London or it was Edinburgh, depending on who he was talking to. He said she would be back any day now. The press were convinced of Dr. Buck Ruxton's guilt, much like the police. The authorities had to be sure their case was strong enough to convict him. The volume of new forensic techniques used in this case could lessen the chances of a conviction if the jury believed the good Dr. Ruxton above a modern-day science they didn't fully understand. Almost a month to the day after Isabella and Mary Jane went missing, Dr. Buck Ruxton was remanded in custody for 8 days by the Lancashire Police. He was accused of murdering Mary Jane Rogerson, but not his common law wife, Isabella Ruxton. He was arrested by Chief Constable Van, who released a statement. Dr. Ruxton was arrested by me at my office at the police station and will probably appear at Lancaster Police Court tomorrow on a charge of murder. A definite point of identification has been established linking the body of the young woman found at Moffitt with Mary Jane Rogerson, the missing Lancaster girl. Inquiries are being continued regarding the fact Mrs. Ruxton is missing and the identification of body number 2 at Moffitt. Pathologists are working on the case. Another link between the victims was formed when it was discovered that they both lived with children, as a short-style baby romper was used to wrap the body parts. The item of clothing was given to the Ruxtons for their baby son, Billy, when they went to stay in a guest house for a holiday the previous year. Mrs. Home, the landlady of the holiday let, said she had gifted what looked to be a handmade hand-me-down to the child, along with some other items. She recognised the clothing by the elastic tie at the waist, which was still tied in a knot she had made. Furthermore, there was the green blouse that had also been used to wrap up some of the body parts. Mary Jane Rogerson's mother confirmed that this belonged to her stepdaughter, as she had lovingly fixed the blouse for Mary Jane, sewing a patch under one arm. It made the item of clothing unique and instantly recognisable. And then there was the significant blunder on the part of Dr. Buck Ruxton. He was spotted after travelling from the location where he disposed of the remains. In a panic, after he threw the incriminating packages over the bridge, Ruxton was speeding through Kendal in Cumbria when he knocked a cyclist off his bicycle. Thankfully, the man was unhurt. The incident rattled the cyclist, as the driver did not stop, but the license plate was memorized and relayed to the police. A roadblock was set up, and the doctor was stopped and questioned, but the outcome simply required him to take his driving documents to Lancaster Police Station the next day. At the time, little was made of the incident, and a report remained on file. However, it became a crucial piece of evidence proving that Ruxton was travelling from the direction of Moffitt on the approximate date when the remains were disposed of. The Ruxton's home, the surgery and all its contents in Dalton Square were seized by the police. Dr. Ruxton's patients were allocated between the other local GPs. Later on, the furniture that was not used as evidence was sold off at a police court hearing. The Ruxtons' 3 children were rehomed, as they could not simply stay there in the care of staff. Six weeks after Ruxton's arrest, a committal hearing was held at Lancaster Police Court. The evidence gathered was so extensive, the proceedings took almost 2 weeks. The remains were referred to as body number 1, which was Mary Jane Rogerson, and body number 2, Isabella Ruxton. A trial was planned for spring of the following year. The 3 children, Elizabeth, age 6, Diane, age 4, and 2-year-old Billy, were too young to be told what had happened to their mother and father. After Dr. Ruxton's arrest, he had sent them to stay in Morecambe with some friends of the family, telling the Andersons it would just be for a few days. The family were only too happy to be their guardians for a short time. With the media interest in the case at its peak, a photographer captured an image of the children smiling. They seemed excited to be staying away from home, unaware of the reason behind their trip to Morecambe. Mrs. Anderson, who the children referred to as Auntie, spoke with reporters. She explained that the three children were told their mother had gone on holiday. Their future was uncertain. Mrs. Anderson later said, "I'm going to see that they are not disturbed while they stay with us, but cannot say whether later they will go to relatives." Unfortunately, the children were taken into the care of a master and matron at a public institution, a children's home called Lancaster Poor Law Union. Their future hinged on whether their father was found guilty at his trial. January 1936. It was reported builders were working on expanding Manchester Assizes to accommodate for the trial due to take place 2 months later. With the prosecution calling over 100 witnesses to the stand and presenting several pieces of large furniture and a small-scale model of the Dalton Square house, the space needed to conduct the trial had grown considerably. The all-male jury had an entire wing reserved for their stay at a nearby hotel. Buck Ruxton was being held at Strangeways Prison at the back of Manchester Assizes. There was a tunnel leading directly from one end to the other. This would be the route the officers planned to take when leading Ruxton to the trial to avoid the angry crowds and numerous reporters that would be waiting outside. The day legal proceedings began. On March 2, 1936, a crowd was photographed having breakfast on the pavement outside the court in Manchester prior to the start of the trial of Dr. Buck Ruxton. It was reported there were three times as many women as there were men waiting to get their place inside. One of them had remained outside the court alone since 10:30 the night before. Miss Mary Phillips told a curious reporter, "I was determined to be first. I have taken a very deep interest in the case. It was not until 4 o'clock in the morning that everyone else joined me." Despite the numerous members of the public seeking to attend the trial, there was little room in the public gallery. Most of the spaces had already been reserved. Although still predominantly women, they were from the upper class and dressed more well-to-do than the crowd of people queuing outside. Attending such a famous trial would be a talking point for months. Norman Burkitt was said to be defending Dr. Buck Ruxton in court. This was big news, because Burkitt had successfully defended Tony Mancini a couple of years before in the famous Brighton Trunk Murders trial, a case covered in Season 2, Episode 9 of this podcast. The proceedings were expected to last 10 days, and although Dr. Ruxton was committed to trial for both murders, surprisingly, he would only be charged with the murder of his wife, Isabella. If found guilty, the doctor could be sentenced to death by hanging. Buck Ruxton pleaded not guilty. The trial was overseen by Mr. Justice Singleton. It was to be his first murder trial since being promoted to the bench. Before the judge entered the courtroom, there was a call, "Put up Buck Ruxton." Three wardens walked the prisoner up to the dock. There was an audible intake of breath from the onlookers in the court. Ruxton appeared respectable, his wavy hair combed neatly in a parting, He wore a dark blue suit, check tie, and a dark wool overcoat. The defendant fixed his gaze on his solicitor, acknowledging him with a slight smile and a nod. He then sat down before requesting some paper and a pencil from the wardens. It was suggested to the court on the first day of the trial that Dr. Buck Ruxton's motive was jealousy. He flew into a rage when Isabella came back from a long day out in Blackpool with her two sisters. They had gone to see the Blackpool Illuminations. When she closed the door to her home on Dalton Square at 11:30 p.m. on September 14, 1935, she was never seen alive again. The prosecution suggested a tirade of abuse followed, and the argument eventually led to Isabella's life being taken in the early morning hours of the next day. Disturbed by the commotion, Mary Jane subsequently lost her life as a consequence after she witnessed her employer murder his wife. It was thought she interrupted Ruxton during an assault in the upstairs hallway, as blood had seeped through the carpets to the wooden floorboards, and there was a trail from the landing to the bathroom. Even though an exact cause of death could not be ascertained, it was concluded Mary Jane had died through asphyxiation, and Isabella was beaten and strangled. Joseph Cooksey Jackson, opening for the prosecution, pointed out the women had been dismembered by someone with medical knowledge and surgical skill. He said, "One could quite well imagine how he must have started to scheme as to what he was to do in order to make this the perfect crime, which would never be discovered." The turbulent relationship between Buck and Isabella Ruxton was explained to the court. The jury were told that after one argument in which Ruxton had accused his partner of being unfaithful, she had reached the end of her tether and packed some clothes to leave. The doctor was witness saying, "She won't come back alive. I will bring her back to the mortuary." The woman the family employed to help around the house had witnessed both physical and verbal violence on many occasions. One such incident involved Isabella Ruxton calling for help. When a maid arrived to see what was wrong, she said the doctor had put a flip knife to her throat. Buck Ruxton left the kitchen and came back. He told the maid, "I had no knife." The employee bravely replied, "Yes, you did, because I heard it click." That same maid, while cleaning, found a gun under Buck Ruxton's pillow. On another occasion, a maid, Vera Shelton, saw the doctor pin Isabella to the bed. His hands were round her throat. The maid saw that Isabella's nightdress was torn and her arms were bruised. When Dr. Ruxton realized they weren't alone, he left the room calling back to Isabella, "You are a dirty prostitute." More evidence of the doctor's rages towards his common-law wife came from a report of threats he made towards her when she fled to the police station. It was noted he spat the words at Isabella, "I would be justified in murdering you." He then explained to the officers, "My wife has been unfaithful. I will kill her if it continues." A second alarming incident involving the police happened 13 months later. Speaking manically and enraged, Ruxton told Detective Sergeant Stainton, who had visited the family home, "I feel like murdering two persons at Dalton Square. My wife is going out to meet a man." A name that Ruxton kept bringing up, a man he believed to be his love rival, was Robert Edmondson, a 25-year-old solicitor working nearby. There was absolutely no indication that Isabella Ruxton and Robert Edmondson were having an affair, but Buck Ruxton was fixated on his partner's imagined infidelity. Edmondson knew the couple, as he was one of a group of people who, along with Isabella, travelled to Edinburgh for a trip the year before she was murdered. Foreshadowing what was to come, on the journey the party travelled over the ravine where parts of Isabella were later discovered. Little did Isabella and the others in the group know, Dr. Buck Ruxton was following them, spying on his partner. The doctor had stuck translucent brown paper over the windows of a borrowed car so as to not be recognised. Isabella signed into the hotel room using her own name, as did Robert Edmondson. They each occupied separate rooms. In fact, Edmondson shared with his father, who was also on the trip. Even though it was a perfectly innocent outing, Ruxton came home under the belief that his wife was planning to leave him for another man. Some of the exhibits in the trial included the bathtub from Dalton Square, the carpets and rugs, handrails from the stairs, and tap fittings from the bathroom. The miniature model of the Ruxton's home that was presented to the court had been handcrafted by a policeman in his spare time. Detailing the gruesome treatment of the bodies after death and offering a theory as to what happened, Joseph Cooksey Jackson told the all-male jury, "They had been horribly mutilated. The skulls had been taken away. The heads had been scalped. And all sorts of things had been done to these bodies." The prosecution suggests that the reasons for these disfigurations were meant to make it more convenient to take the bodies from Lancaster to Moffat, and secondly, to destroy any signs which might lead to their identity. With an array of witnesses and a mountain of evidence expertly gathered from police officers and forensic scientists, the jury took only 1 hour to come to a unanimous decision. Dr. Buck Ruxton was found guilty. Mr. Justice Singleton put on his black cap. Everyone knew what that meant. Buck Ruxton was sentenced to death. An appeal against Buck Ruxton's execution was put forward. There had been no blood found in the car in which Ruxton was said to have transported the remains, and it was argued the jury were misdirected by the judge. Mr. Justice Singleton had instructed the jury to consider the evidence by Mrs. Hampshire, a patient of Ruxton's. She had mentioned that she was given a suit by Ruxton that appeared to be stained in blood. The judge did not, however, direct the jury to reflect on the testimony she gave when cross-examined, in which Mrs. Hampshire acknowledged that it may not have been blood. Regardless, Ruxton's appeal was rejected by the Court of Appeal on May 1st, and the date of his hanging was set for less than 2 weeks later. On Tuesday, May 12, 1936, at 9 a.m, Dr. Ruxton was scheduled to be executed. Surprisingly, in the interim, a petition was organised by one of the solicitors who defended him. It was set on a table inside Ruxton's old property on Dalton Square. A typed letter was pinned to the door inviting people in to sign for the sake of Ruxton's children. A varying number of supporters were reported by the press. Some stated 900 signatures were obtained. Others say it was 10,000. Buck Ruxton still claimed he was innocent to his counsel even up to his death. However, he had written an instruction the day after his arrest. It was to be opened after his execution, or it was to be given back upon his acquittal. In the letter, Ruxton confessed to both murders. He confirmed what was already suspected. Ruxton killed Isabella and Mary Jane was unfortunate enough to see it, meaning the doctor killed her too. The letter read, "I killed Mrs. Ruxton in a fit of temper because I thought she had been with a man. I was mad at the time. Mary Jane Rogerson was present at the time. I had to kill her." Police held back a huge crowd of onlookers outside Strangeways Jail in Manchester before the execution of Dr. Buck Ruxton. In press clippings, it appears like a day out at a concert. Officers linking arms at the front while the smiling crowd are packed so tightly the police have no choice but to move forward. However, a cream-coloured limousine blocked the entrance to the prison. The driver, Violet van der Elst, had done so deliberately. At the time, she was regularly campaigning against the death penalty. Van der Elst, prominently dressed in all black, handed out leaflets and spoke to the press. She was met with hostility as the crowd surrounded her car. One woman shouted, "What if it was your daughter chopped up?" After 10 minutes, a police officer moved the vehicle out of the way, and someone in the throng shouted that they should pawn the car and give the money to the poor. Later that day, van der Elst appeared in court and was fined £20 for the disturbance. Buck Ruxton had spent the night before his death in the condemned cell next to the execution chamber. He received no visitors and spent his time making sure his affairs were in order, leaving any assets to his three children. Ruxton said he wished for his son to follow his path in the medical field and wanted his two daughters to be nurses. His three children were still unaware of the fate of their mother and father. Elizabeth, Diane and Billy were photographed playing in the grounds of a children's home on the day of Buck Ruxton's hanging. So where are we now? 10 days before Buck Ruxton's execution, Isabella's remains were returned to her birthplace in Scotland so a funeral could finally take place. Once again, and for the final time, Isabella travelled over the bridge in Moffat. Mary Jane Rogerson was also laid to rest in early May, buried in St Helen's Churchyard, a cemetery in Overton near Morecambe, a village where she spent her childhood. The murder scene, 2 Dalton Square in Lancaster, remained empty for 4 decades. The house sat falling into disrepair. The Grade 2 listed building, which was over 200 years old, finally became of use after it was renovated and used as offices for the council's planning department. After the extensive publicity surrounding the court case, Buck Ruxton became famous. The story of the doctor murdering his common-law wife Isabella and the family nanny Mary Jane gained a great deal of notoriety. The interest in the macabre case had peaked, and the Chamber of Horrors at Madame Tussauds in London made a wax figure of the murderer. Before televisions were in every home, the site drew a great deal of tourists to the still popular attraction. The figure remained there, enticing thrill seekers for many years to come. A radio play Secrets of Scotland Yard, very much in the style of the time, was released as part of a popular series. The dramatisation of the crimes, Dr. Ruxton Axe Killer, guessed a great deal of the gruesome detail, some of which it would be impossible to know, but still followed the timeline of the events. The bathtub used to drain and dissect the bodies of Isabella and Mary Jane was taken and adopted by the Lancashire Constabulary, utilised as a horse trough at the police station headquarters near Preston. And the children of Lancashire sang nursery rhymes about the gruesome crimes. Thank you for listening. A special thanks to our new Patreon producer, Jean Lee Kruger, and everyone who supports us on Patreon. For more information on this episode, please see the show notes or visit our website, theywalkamonguspodcast.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.